If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Okay, Reg, how are we doing today? Microphone's in the good spot. No, either no one touched it or they saw no need to touch it. Either way, works well. Okay, sir, are you ready to go? Because I am. Thumbs up is good to see from the engineering room, booth, whatever you want to call that. So very good. Let's get on with the podcast then, shall we? Put it in the books, episode number 463. I'll give you the three S's, star, smile, strong. And here we go. Ready? Cool. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, it's the primary goal is for you to listen to the podcast. However, right under it, I wouldn't even say secondary. Primary minus one is to do your best to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and therefore it should be theirs as well. Your loyalty and devotion, getting out there and spreading the word, is much appreciated, of course. And if you like what you hear, whether you're a longtime listener or just new to the podcast, you can always hear where we've been so you get a better idea of where we're going by going to WGNRadio.com, going to the podcast section, hitting the prompt for this specific podcast, and there you will find several years' worth of podcasts dating back 2, 3, maybe even 4 years. Just scroll down and load more. We've been doing this since May of 2016. The proof is this is episode 463. Well, what would a podcast whose title, well, first of all, what would a podcast whose host is nicknamed Elton Jim after, of course, legendary pop music legend, Elton John. Get the connection there? Jim John, Elton John, Elton Jim. Get it? Hopefully it wasn't that difficult to figure out. But what kind of podcast would it be if the host, whose nickname is Elton Jim, what kind of podcast would it be if whose title is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, which is a slight homage and takeoff on one of Elton John's, I believe, if not the greatest album he's ever created, and which has become a moniker for him, Captain Fantastic. Instead of fan, I inserted Podtastic. This podcast is Podtastic. It's a fantastic podcast. Thus, it is Podtastic. And Elton John was Captain Fantastic, and Elton Jim is Captain Podtastic. See, I'm giving away all my secrets right here. Just want to get those out there to make sure that If you didn't get the subtleties after this long, that's what's going on. And to even reinforce that association, a podcast hosted by a guy whose nickname is Elton Jim, a podcast whose name is a tribute to an Elton John album, Captain Podtastic, then even the logo that we use for the podcast is an homage, if you will, is a takeoff on the same kind of script and font used on the Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy album. So, it may have been lost on some people. It may have been subtle. Some may have seen it right away. That's the way I like to do things. I don't like to hit people over the head with it. I put it out there. And for those who get it instantly, you go, ah, okay, cool. For those who might not be aware and then suddenly it dawns on them and they go, oh, I get it now. Or maybe there's some that said, wow, I didn't know that. Like, for instance, for those people that may have been listening to the podcast for many years or are new to it and you didn't understand the title, you didn't know the reference of the font of that's fine. Now, I hope that I've piqued your curiosity, that you'll go online, for instance, and Google Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy album cover, and there you will see the font that's used, and then you can compare it to the font that I use and the design that I use for my podcast. And then you will understand the Captain Fantastic reference and the Captain Podtastic reference, considering that this is a podcast. So I'm being completely transparent now. As I approach the 10-year anniversary of this, I should start to be a little more transparent on things revolving around the podcast. As we both get close to the 10th anniversary as well as the 500th episode, subtlety be damned. Now, if you haven't picked up on some of these little hints and clues, then I'm going to give them to you now. You've had more than enough time to perhaps discover them on your own. If you haven't, that's fine. If you weren't driven to do it, that's fine. But now perhaps that I've revealed something here, not really the first time, but it's been a while, maybe it will pique your interest. Ultimately, what I would love, if you're not familiar with the album, Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy by Elton John, I would hope that perhaps if you go look it up, just to see what I'm talking about, the name and the font and how it compares to the design that I use as kind of the logo for the podcast. My ultimate hope would be that you would actually listen to the album. Maybe even buy it. How cool is that? It's a pretty cool album package to buy. Now, these days, I don't know how they've recreated it at all. But when it came out in 1975, it was quite a package. Elton John was at the height of his creative powers and his success and his popularity and his fame in 1975. It was quite a year for him. And this album reflected that. The entire cover was a fold-out, gatefold kind of album cover that folded open. The cover expanded into a whole big illustration done by a very noted illustrator who had worked for the Beatles and other people named Alan Aldridge. And this cover has become legendary, and it is regularly placed in any lists of some of the best album covers of all time, certainly of the 70s. It's detailed. It's beautifully drawn. The packaging for the album came with a poster of this entire illustration that goes on the front and the back cover, just because it was so elaborate and so beautiful and so interesting to look at all the different images. Alan Aldridge was a very creative guy, and there's the cover itself. You know, if you buy one album on vinyl of Elton John's, I would suggest you get Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy. You could probably find it at used record stores. Hopefully, as I said, it was quite a package. Not only did it have this elaborate gatefold album cover that opened up, but then it came with several booklets that were illustrated by Alan Aldridge as well. The lyric book, there was kind of a scrapbook that detailed the entire early career and partnership of Elton John and Bernie Taupin, because that's really what the album is about. Elton John is Captain Fantastic, and Bernie Taupin is the Brown Dirt Cowboy. And the album, the 10 songs of the album, revolve around their early lives and then the beginning of their partnership leading up to their first album in 1969, official album called Empty Sky. And it kind of follows their upbringing and then as the beginnings of their partnership and the frustrations of their early career to get their music heard, to find their own voice and sound, and ultimately to the creation of their first album then, which began the ride. So it came with a poster of the album cover. It came with two booklets. One, an illustrated lyric book. Another one, kind of a scrapbook of many of the early things, including some of Elton's own journal, diary, postings back in 1968 and 1969, which is really cool to read. Old photos, clippings, you name it. And of course, even in there, they also put a little flyer to join the Elton John fan club. A little commerce is always good too, but it was quite a package. I mean, when I remember buying that album, and when you bought it, it was still shrink wrapped, of course, but it had heft. And inside was a great album. Of course, even the record label was illustrated with a version of the cover. It was a real elaborate. A lot of money was spent. A lot of time was spent. It was a beautifully curated package of materials. And it still stands, and I believe it stands as Elton's best album. Yes, yes. In my view, even before Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. I know that may be blasphemous for some people, but I believe that the 10 songs on Captain Fantastic, the original album, you may go online and see some other songs in there that were released on remastered CD versions where extra songs were added that were either released as singles during that time or outtakes or things like that, B-sides. But the original album contains 10 songs. And those 10 songs, taken as a group, individually and collectively, I believe, is Elton John's best album. Even though I can't complain and can't deny that Goodbye Yellow Brick Road is right up there, and it's a double album, so it's even more of an accomplishment to put out two albums at one time and have the standard of excellence so high. Don't get me wrong, but in terms of quality, song for song, listening experience, for me, it's Captain Fantastic. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road is right there, and I'm sure I could have a debate with a lot of people on that. So that would be even the ultimate thing for me, because, and I should mention that Captain Fantastic was the first album in the history of the Billboard charts, to enter the charts at number one. It had never been done before. Elton did it in late May or early June of 1975. Frank Sinatra never did it. The Beatles never did it. Elvis never did it. Nobody ever did it. Nobody ever had their album come out and debut at number one. The demand was so great for that album that the first week, everybody just ran out and bought it pretty much without even hearing anything from it. The single, Someone Saved My Life Tonight, had been released, but that was it. But there was such a great clamoring and anticipation for a new Elton John album at that time, especially since it was the first one in almost a year, and the greatest hits package had been put out. And then he had two number one-off singles earlier in that year, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and Philadelphia Freedom. So his career was really on fire. I mention all this, little background, once again, a little detour, but still, it's there's a reason for the detour, and I come back to the main road. It would be odd. It would be almost blasphemous, I would think, if I were to not discuss a new Elton John album, which has just been released. Just a few days ago, this podcast will be posting on April 7th, and this album was released on Friday, April 4th. So it's brand spanking new, and I just figured it. Of course, I want to talk about it, but I also think it would be almost kind of odd if, once again, a podcast posted by somebody with the nickname Elton Jim, and with the title of the podcast being Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, not to talk about a new Elton John album would be kind of odd, wouldn't it? Yeah. So, yeah, I think I'm within my bounds here of talking about it, because as I said many times, this podcast is hopefully, and it's an extension, it's a dialogue, hopefully between you and me, the individual listener. Hopefully there's more than just one of you out there. but also it's a sharing of me in many ways, of my thoughts and on several different topics, life experiences, this thing like that. And there's no question that Elton John's music, as well as he personally, has played a major role in my life for more than 50 years, since I was a little kid. And so this is not an Elton John focused podcast where every week we talk about a new album or we talk about whatever's going on in Elton John's career. No, that's not what this is about. As I said, the topic or the title is an homage to Elton, but it's not about him. But every so often when there is some news or some reason to talk about Elton in some way that has affected me or some big news about him, I certainly have felt that I'm within my within the realms of this podcast to talk about it. And hopefully you find it interesting. Even if you're not an Elton John fan, hopefully, if you listen to what I'm talking about, maybe you'll be moved to listen to the new album or not. That's your choice. Maybe along the way, I might, the course of talking about things, I might drop a few little interesting tidbits that you may not be aware of. Once again, I'm not there to promote the album. I certainly am a fan and a longtime fan. I would hope that you would, if you have an inkling or some curiosity about it, I'd love for you to take a listen to the album, because I do believe that his music is worth listening to. But hey, you know what? I'm not here to ultimately promote it, but it's a part of me. Yeah, when a new Elton John record comes out, that's a big deal in my life. And so just like anything else that might happen or occur to me, and I share with you, this is part of it too. It comes with the package. And once again, hey, the name is in the title, right? So, yeah, on April 4th, a new Elton John album was released. And there's also a very interesting aspect to it right off the bat. It is not merely an Elton John album. Yes, it is, but it is a collaborative album with a very respected and to some extent well-known country or Americana singer, Brandi Carlile, singer-songwriter as well. Much more known in the United States than around the world. And part of the reason I think that Elton did this is that they have become very good friends over the last two decades. And I really believe at this point in his life, Elton cherishes her friendship very much on a personal level. He respects and is an admiring of her talent. And I think in a very magnanimous and generous gesture, he is using his legend and his star power to help elevate Brandi Carlile's exposure to people around the world who may not be aware of it. Now, we should mention that Brandi Carlile is no little upstart. I mean, she's 43 years old, but she's won 11 Grammys. Okay, so she's no upstart here. She's very well known in the country and Americana music world. That's a little niche, and especially in today's world, but she has certainly earned the respect that she has, and she's got an amazing voice, as well as being a singer-songwriter, but her voice is really a strong and emotive and powerful instrument. And it is much on display on this new collaborative album by Elton John and Brandi Carlile called Who Believes in Angels. And it is truly a collaborative effort. This is not just an Elton John album with Brandi Carlile singing some background vocals and Elton just kind of putting her name along with his on the top of, you know, above the title. Far from it. In fact, if there's a criticism of this album, some may say at times it almost sounds like a Brandi Carlile album with Elton John supporting her because her voice is so prominent in many of the songs. Her voice takes the lead vocal or even starts the songs in many occurrences here on the album. And certainly at many times it's very high in the mix and dominates in many of the songs. Elton is just merely harmonizing with her. It's not just like a duet, like Don't Go Breaking My Heart, the famous duet that Elton did back in the 70s. That was a number one song around the world with Kiki D, where Elton sang a couple of lines and Kiki sang a couple of lines and Elton sang a couple of lines and Kiki sang it. No, this is truly a collaborative effort. By all reports, Elton, who composes the music to his songs, went into the studio deliberately to create a very different sounding album. He had just finished in 2023 in the summer in Stockholm, of which I was there, my 215th concert, finished his farewell tour and put an end to his touring. He still performs on occasion, always said he would. The press and the public have obviously, they don't pay close attention, and so there's always, oh, I thought he quit. No, he didn't quit. He said he was retiring from touring, meaning he was going to go on the road for months at a time from city to city. He's not doing that anymore. Yes, he is performing some select shows every now and then. He's not giving up performing. He never said he would. He never said he was going to give up recording. He just said, I'm not going to give up touring, being on the road for months at a time, away from home, the strenuous aspect of life on the road. Been doing that for more than 50 years, almost 60 years. And so he wanted to spend time with his family, his young sons, and his husband, and just relax. And he has every right to do that. But he never said he was quitting or retiring, and you never hear from him again. That was never the case, even when they announced the farewell tour in 2018, which went longer than it was supposed to because COVID delayed it. He made it very clear, but it was, oh, I'm retiring from the road, and people just took that as I'm retiring, which is not the case. It never was the case, and he's proving that it isn't the case. He's continued to perform select shows, corporate gigs. Just did a concert, in fact, to promote this album to some extent just a few weeks ago at the London Palladium, a one-off show. It was, in fact, made into a special, TV special, that was just on yesterday on April 6th on CBS, and I believe it's going to be on in the UK in a couple of weeks. So he's still going to perform, just not from town to town, month to month, like he had been for several decades, and he was going to continue to record and do other projects, and that's exactly what he's doing. And this is one of the first of those since his retirement. In fact, as I said, he got off the road in July of 2023, and by October, he had decided on a creative team and musicians and booked studio time to record this collaboration with Brandi Carlile. Not the first time that he has done something like this. I'll tell you one thing about Elton John. Despite his success, he has been very generous and very supportive of new artists, of well-known artists, of legendary artists. He really is a music fan to his core. And he really is, as I said, a very generous person in wanting to help wherever he can. Throughout his career, he has appeared on many people's albums, whether it was to play the piano or sing a backup role or do a collaborative project. This is nothing new. He's done it with all types of people, with legends, with unknowns, with established people, with people that he has tried to promote, with old friends. He's appeared, there was the man he took his name from, the John part of Elton John, was an artist in London, of which Elton played in his backing band, Long John Baldry, who was a singer who had a hit in the late 60s. And Elton had his own band called Bluesology, and they were the backing band for this Long John Baldry for a couple of years. And that's where the John part of Elton John comes from John Baldry. In fact, in the song Someone Saved My Life Tonight from the album Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy, the reference in the song Someone Saved My Life Tonight, Sugar Bear, the Sugar Bear reference is a reference to Long John Baldry, because he basically, as that song goes and as the story goes, Elton, when he was in his early 20s, was engaged to a woman. And they were ready to get married, and Long John Baldry sat Elton down and said, you know, you should not get married. Not only is your career something you should be thinking about, because you're a very talented guy, but, you know, I don't know if marrying a woman is the best thing for you. And considering Elton's sexuality, and Elton ultimately called off that wedding, and the former Reg Dwight became Elton John and became one of the biggest stars in the history of music. So, but my point is, Elton has produced an album for Long John Baldry in the 70s. He wrote songs and appeared on songs with Ringo Starr in the 70s. Of course, he helped promote. He had a record company called Rocket Records, which he still has, or Rocket Entertainment, and signed many bands, including, for a time, his protege, Kiki D, who not only appeared on that single, Don't Go Breaking My Heart, which I mentioned to you before in 1976, but he also helped boost her career. Many of his band members were on her early albums. She was signed to his record company. And Kiki continues to perform today, and I'm sure she would certainly have to thank Elton John for her career. There's no question about that. He sang backup with John Lennon on Whatever Gets You Through the Night, which became a number one song. He provided the background vocals to Neil Sedaka's Bad Blood, which became a number one song in 1975. In fact, he helped rejuvenate Neil Sedaka's career in the mid-70s by signing Neil Sedaka to his Rocket Record label. Sedaka hadn't done anything in more than 10 years after having success in the 60s. And Elton heard some of his songs that he had been releasing in England that were not released here in the United States for whatever reason, as Neil Sedaka was considered an oldies act. And Elton signed him to his Rocket Records in 1974. And Neil Sedaka had a huge, huge comeback career in the mid to late 70s with several number one hits like Laughter in the Rain and Bad Blood. Became a huge star all over again. There's a slowed down kind of ballad version of his former hit, Breaking Up Is Hard to Do. He, as I said, has lent himself to countless albums of new artists or established artists over the years. Always wanting to be creative in some way and help people whom he believed in. And he's a big supporter of new acts, Ed Sheeran, Rowan Chapel, just a few. He had a number one song a few years ago with a remix of a kind of a mixed up studio creation of his songs with Dua Lipa. And then he followed that up with a duet with Britney Spears on a takeoff on Tiny Dancer. He has certainly shown that he enjoys and is very open to collaborating with people. He did an amazing collaboration, which I think is one of his best albums, certainly I think one of the best in the last 15 years, in 2010 with one of his idols, Leon Russell, who now has passed away. But Leon Russell was a big star in the late 60s and early 70s as a producer, as well as a solo act, singer-songwriter. Worked with Joe Cocker, had his own success. He was a great musician, certainly on the piano as one of the instruments he played. And he was a great influence to Elton John. And Leon had fallen on hard times, despite his success and influence in the 70s. Over the next, 30 or 40 years, his career basically had slowed down. He was playing small little bars and small little nightclubs. And Elton in 2010 phoned him up and said, "I'd like to make an album with you." And it was truly a collaborative effort. They collaborated on songs together, along with Bernie Taupin supplying some of the lyrics and working with Leon as well on the lyrics. And it's called The Union, and it's one of my favorite Elton John albums as well. So here was somebody that influenced Elton, and Elton wanted to pay back the favor. Like, hey, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be who I was. And there's no question that Elton's success and fame, was greater ultimately than Leon Russell's, but Elton didn't forget the important role that Leon Russell's music played in his development, and he wanted to pay that back to Leon Russell. And by doing this album with him, he put Leon Russell back into the public eye. A song from the album received a Grammy nomination. And ultimately, thanks to this album and elevating Leon Russell's persona and his his background and his legacy. Thanks, and also I think thanks to a personal letter that Elton may have wrote, Leon Russell deservedly became a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So Elton was able, through the money that the album made, Leon was able to get out of debt and to elevate his own lifestyle. He bought a new tour bus, and his later years, he gained the respect that he had always deserved but had lost over the years, and was able to pass on, sadly, only a few years after the album, but with a new appreciation by the public and a dignity as one of the great rock and roll legends of the 60s and 70s era. And so now, 15 years later, Elton is now paying forward to someone who he influenced. Because Brandi Carlile, even though she's a country artist and an Americana singer, is, and I've seen interviews with her, there's no question, she is a dyed-in-the-wool Elton John fan. She's 43 years old. She discovered Elton in the early 90s, obviously given her age, but she claims that since she was 11 years old, she's been a diehard Elton John fan. I've seen interviews with her where she's got all the posters and albums. She even had a notebook, a piece of spiral notebook paper that she wrote when she was 10 or 11 or 12 or something like that. And both sides of the page, from the margin to the end of the page, both sides, every line on both sides of the page, it says, "I love Elton John. I love Elton John." So clearly, his music and Bernie Taupin's lyrics have been a huge, huge influence on her since she was a little kid. And now here she is. She's actually won twice as many Grammys as Elton. I don't know how you figure that out, but it's true. Brandi Carlile has 11 Grammys. Elton has only 5. But let's not forget, Elton is a knight in the British the British government. So I think he's got a few things up on Brandy. But yeah, so she's accomplished on her own. And she definitely, without any hesitation, says she owes her life and her career and her music to Elton John. So this gesture of Elton's at this stage in his life and his career, he just turned 78 a few weeks ago, for him to have helped out somebody that influenced him, and now he, at his stage, is saying, "I want to help someone who I influenced." The two have been friends for about 20 years. Apparently, back in the 90s, when her career just began, she wrote him a letter, and she got it through the right channels to say, "Hey, would you appear on one of my albums?" And he did, and they met, and from all accounts, they became very fast friends, and they have been friends for almost 20 years. Brandy is also gay. Has a wife. They have two children, just like Elton, who has a husband and two children. So they've bonded on gay activism issues as well, and gay lifestyle issues, and parenthood and music. They vacation together. And by all accounts, Elton has said no uncertain terms that she is a major part of his life, and has been for many years. But still, to go out and make this extra effort of his friendship and his love for her, to bring her into his creative realm, that's a huge, huge gesture. It's one thing to say, "This is my friend," but Elton John, and what that means in terms of the name and the legacy and the accomplishment and the expectations, that's some amorphous entity unto itself. Elton John, it's more than just a person. It evokes many, many different ideas. It's almost an entity unto itself. Elton John is a thing more than a person. And to invite her in, to collaborate with him, as I said, is quite a gesture. And as I said from the interviews that they've done to promote the album, Brandy says it's almost surreal that he would invite me in. She said, I don't even know, at the beginning of this project, she said, I don't even know why he would want me to do it. What could I bring to an Elton John project after what he's accomplished in his illustrious career? And ironically, Elton tells a story that despite finishing this triumphant farewell tour that sold out every show and traversed the world several times, and it ended on some of the highest notes it could, amazing live show at Dodger Stadium in November of 2022, the biggest crowd ever at the famed Glastonbury Outdoor Music Festival when he played there in June of 2023, and then the actual end of the tour in Stockholm. So he ended on this triumphant career high. But ironically, after two or three months in October, whether it was depression of coming down from that, of wondering, what do I do next? How do I top that? Whatever. Artists, for as much as they are accomplished, they continue to be very insecure about this talent that they have. Their past success, they know, doesn't guarantee future success, and that's scary. And it's amazing when you look at the accomplishments of some of these people, and yet they still feel insecure at times. And Elton, from what he was saying, felt very out of sorts as he walked into the studio. He didn't want to make another traditional Elton John album. He was set to work with Bernie Taupin. From what I understand, he even had a new batch of lyrics that Bernie gave him back in 2019 before COVID that Elton never even put music to. But rather than doing something that he had done before, he wanted to do something different. And he didn't know if he could do it again, and he was looking for inspiration. And he looked to Brandi Carlile. If I inspired her, I think she could inspire me. And he brought in one of the most in-demand producers of the day right now, a guy named Andrew Watt, who just won a Grammy Award for producing the Rolling Stones' latest album, Hackney Diamonds. He's also worked on recent projects with Metallica and Red Hot Chili Peppers and Pearl Jam. So he's one of the hot producers right now, as well as other hip-hop and other kind of pop people. So he's really one of the in-demand producers, and he helped produce a couple of songs on Elton's duets album a few years ago called The Lockdown Sessions, and then he also produced this duet, as I mentioned, that came out a couple of years ago with Britney Spears. Was a kind of electronica version of Tiny Dancer called Hold Me Closer, kind of a dance club mix of Tiny Dancer, which was a very successful single as well. So he brought Andrew Watt in to produce the entire album. He was bringing in Brandi Carlile, who is a singer-songwriter in her own right, lyrics and music. And he also wanted to bring in Bernie Taupin as well to be a part of this. He and Bernie have been writing together for the most part since 1967. They took a little break from each other in the late 70s and early 80s, but they've been pretty much back together since then. And so he brought in Bernie and Brandy and Andrew, as well as a studio band, including Chad Smith, who was the drummer of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and decided to create this truly collaborative album. Walked in the studio with no songs written at all. And as I said, many people, whether you know or not, it's I would hope people know by now, but still some people don't, that, you know, Elton doesn't write lyrics. He just writes music. And he writes the music to the lyric when he gets it. He doesn't know what the lyric is about. He doesn't see them beforehand and think about it. He literally takes a stack of lyrics, puts them on the piano, look at the title, reads the first couple of lines, oh, this looks interesting, and sits down and starts to go line by line and begins to compose a song. And usually by 10 or 15 minutes, he's got the rough construction of it. And in many times within the half hour, he's got the song written in its foundational way. It's a talent that he doesn't know how or why it happens. It's truly a gift. It's an inherent talent. He certainly has honed it and crafted it through the years, but just because I'm a fan of his, I don't mean to over exaggerate this, but I think I'm being very objective when I say that Elton John's musical talent, whether you like his music or not, whether you like his persona or not, if you just look at his raw talent, his piano playing ability and his songwriting ability for a melody to write a song within 5 or 10 minutes, it is truly a once in a generation, if not once in a lifetime gift. It really is on a par with people that you think of in genius, in the genius category of people like Mozart or even other artists like Da Vinci, things like that. It truly is an unexplainable talent that he was born with. As I said, he's honed it, he's refined it, but that, whatever that is, he doesn't even understand it as well. And he doesn't question it, or doesn't even try to explain it. It just happens. And so that was a risky idea, because Brandi Carlile was certainly not used to working within that structure of her writing lyrics and then putting them and handing them over to Elton John and say to her idol, since he was 11, to say, okay, write a song to that. Would her lyrics live up to the standard that Elton and Bernie Taupin have created over the last 50 some years, written some of the best selling and best known and beloved songs ever? Your Song, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Betty the Jets, things like that. I mean, that was a scary, gutsy move by her. I mean, she couldn't turn down this opportunity, but I'm sure it was still filled with a lot of stress and uncertainty. And so they got into the studio, and Elton, as I said, for whatever reason, he was feeling very insecure and very pressured and very uncertain if he still had it in him at age 76. Can I still do this with the same type of energy and passion and results that I had done it when I was 26? And so perhaps that's why he brought Brandy in. He wanted someone he could feel comfortable with, someone he can trust, someone he respected, someone he admired their musical talent with, and someone that he felt could inspire him. And if you have to say anything about this new album, as I said, which just came out Friday, on April 4th, the album, as well as a title track, Who Believes in Angels. At the very least, what you have to say about this album is that Elton's singing, and especially his piano playing, is inspired. You could feel the genuine excitement and inspiration and creative explosion and excitement about it. You can debate whether you like the songs. You can debate whether you like the album. You could debate the specific songs or the collective, you know, quality of the album. But if you listen close, you can really hear that Elton was able to achieve what he had hoped to, is to be inspired again and to get back into it. And he says very bluntly, and in fact, there's a small short film that you can watch on YouTube that shows each song being, there were cameras in the studio and they were hidden, and you could see that everybody in the studio forgot about those cameras, whether they weren't obvious. I guess they were kind of almost like hidden GoPros. But you see song by song, the creative process happen. And there are certain times Elton's temper is legendary. And he, at the beginning of the project, the pressure, internal as well as external perhaps, was just getting to him, and he threw temper tantrums and fits. He threatened to quit the project all told. He tore up a lyric sheet that Brandy had given him out of frustration. But as the process continues, as he said, after about a week or so, they started to get some tracks down, and everything started to flow. And within 20 days, they had written 14 songs, and here's the album. Now, I have to say, being a Elton John fan for more than 50 years, and him being my idol in so many ways, musically, other ways, you know, whenever there's a new album, I mean, this in Elton world, this is a big deal, a new album, especially in this case. Well, he did have an album that came out in 2021 called The Lockdown Sessions. It was kind of a cobbled together affair. Elton had done some background vocals or background pianos for different artists. As I said before, he's always been very generous. And after four or five or six of these, he said, well, geez, you know, I've done so much of these. This is almost an album. And so using some of those songs that he appeared on in a supportive role, as well as adding some new songs, they put this album out that came out during COVID called The Lockdown Sessions. But in my view, it wasn't really, I don't consider it an official Elton John album. Yes, there were some, you know, original songs on there. I get it. As well as some of these other ones. And there's a couple of good songs on there too. But in terms of a real kind of thought out, planned Elton John album, I don't know if the Lockdown Sessions really fit that definition. It was kind of like, oh, well, I've done four or five of these little guesting appearances, whether it's a piano part or a background vocal. And you know, maybe people don't even know about them. But we've almost got an album here. And so it was kind of this, in the COVID world, how do we put together something? I'm a little restless or whatever. I don't really look at that as an official album. It is, I guess, certainly. It did spawn the number one song, you know, with Dua Lipa. But I don't know. Maybe that's just my own thing. I don't view it as a real Elton John album, per se. A lot of the songs he had very little to do with. He didn't write a lot of them. He just appeared on them. You know, the Dua Lipa song was just a studio creation by a Australian group called Panal that basically just edited several Elton John songs, went into his catalog. He gave them permission to just take whatever you want and electronically create a song, and they did. So he didn't have really anything to do with that. So if you go back then to a real Elton John album where he and Bernie Taupin worked together, and it was a planned album with a band and lyrics, and it's an Elton John, Bernie Taupin album. You have to go back to 2015, 2016, almost 10 years ago. An album that was called Wonderful Crazy Night, which was okay. It wasn't great. So it's been a while. Even if we count the lockdown sessions, that was in 2021. It's been 4 years. So it's been a while. And if you look for a real kind of full Elton John album of all original songs, of him writing the music and Bernie Taupin providing the lyrics and his band providing the accompaniment, well, then you have to go, I said, back to 2016. So it's been a while. And so great expectations when we hear about a new album, which was kind of first hinted by Elton in November of 2023 at an award show. I believe he was inducting Bernie Taupin into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And he had mentioned, you know, we just created a new album that's going to really surprise people. It's vibrant and it's contemporary and I'm very excited about it. And then we didn't hear from this album for almost a year and a half. It was recorded in 2023 and just came out now. So more than a year passed. Much more than a year. And so there's been great anticipation, waiting patiently for this. Then word started to trickle out. In fact, Pete Townsend even broke the news back in December of 2023, saying, oh, well, he's making an album with Brandi Carlile, and nobody was, you know, I don't know if Elton's camp or management was really happy about that. It was supposed to be under wraps. But here we are. Now, we did get a little hint of this in 2024. The Oscar-nominated song called Never Too Late comes from this album and really helped inspire this bigger collaboration. Brandi wrote the lyrics after seeing a rough cut of this documentary that came out in 2024 about Elton's career and culminating with the Dodger Stadium show and his early career in the 70s. And so she was inspired to write this lyric called It's Never Too Late. And the song wound up being played at the end of the credits of that documentary, and therefore it was eligible for Oscar consideration, and it was nominated for an Academy Award just this past year. So if Elton John's goal is to expose and to elevate Brandi Carlile's exposure and career and talent to the world, even before this album came out, which it just came out in April, it already started several months ago by getting Brandi her first Oscar nomination ever. Not bad. The first song she ever wrote for Elton John winds up getting an Oscar nomination. Not bad. And so now we have the full album, finally, 10 songs. Supposedly they wrote 14. There is one outtake that appears on a DVD of the recording session, but the actual official album contains 10 songs. And so I have to say, I mean, look, at this point in Elton John's career, and when many artists, legacy artists, as they say, get to this point in their career, the critics are a little easier on them. Elton John has had a very interesting career with the critics. He started as a critic's darling. They loved him in the early 70s for his music and his early songs, like the Elton John album with the orchestra, or the Tumbleweed Connection, which was a very band, the band, and very kind of Americana country and Western influence. And then Madman Across the Water, which includes Tiny Dancer and Levon and so many great songs, as well as the orchestration and things like that, considered one of his best albums. And then, of course, he betrayed the serious music critics by going off and becoming popular. And gosh darn it, if he didn't even get a number one song. And back in the 70s, the music critics were on their own, were trying to establish themselves and the idea of music criticism as something serious because it wasn't taken that way. And so Elton John became a very favorite punching bag for the critics because he was the biggest star in the world. He had the crazy outfits. He had the crazy glasses. And many times the critics panned his greatest albums in the 70s because he wasn't the rock star that they wanted at that time. Don't forget, the Beatles had broken up in 1970, and the rock and pop world were looking for who were going to be the next Beatles. And the music critics felt like they should be the ones who ordained the next big thing. And meanwhile, the public fell in love with Elton John's music, and they ordained Elton the king of music and pop music from 1972 through 1976. And so he went from a critic's darling in the early 70s to the critic's punching bag. And he's always had a very love-hate relationship with the music press. They've always been very hesitant to give him the true due that he deserves. Only in the last, I would say, 15 or 20 years has, when a new breed of rock critic and younger breed who knows Elton now from The Lion King and things like that, as well as some of the older ones who say, wow, you know, I was wrong. This guy's are still around 50 years. We thought he was just going to be a flash in the pan with the wild outfits and the glasses and the crocodile rocks, but he's proven to be the real thing. I mean, anybody who watched him sing at Lady Di's funeral knows he's the real thing. And so he's gained a new respect and a new popularity in the last 15 to 20 years. And that funeral, the Lady Di's funeral, played a big role, I believe, in that. Between The Lion King and that worldwide appearance, people gained a new respect for Elton John and his talent and his career. And so over the last several years, the press, especially the British press, was always very hard on Elton, have now fully embraced him. And this album has gotten very good reviews. Out of 5 stars, many 4-star reviews. Some have called it a masterpiece. Some of that, I believe, is a courtesy. Here's a 78-year-old guy who's still doing it. He deserves points just for that. And who's still playing well, still playing extremely well, the great piano, and whose voice is still prominent, still strong, especially now having rested for more than 2 years, not touring regularly. So he's getting some of the benefit of the doubt, some of the respect that he has earned with a 50-some-year career and some accomplishments that are unique to just him, just milestone type of accomplishments and legacies that he's created. I have to say, one thing about me as an Elton John fan, I will give Elton John the most flowery adjectives of positivity there are. I will gush over him when I believe the gushing is deserved. But being a journalist, as I said, at least trained, even in my fandom, I've always brought some objectivity into when I view Elton's career and his music. I don't believe that everything he does and everything and every album and every song he does is great. Some fans do, and if you don't believe that, they don't consider you a real fan. I understand that mindset, but I come from it from a different angle. I view Elton as a human being who is flawed, and he admits it, who doesn't do everything great, who does make some mistakes creatively, artistically. And I've called those out. And I believe that I'm trying to treat him as a true artist and as a human being as opposed to some godlike figure. And if people view him as a godlike figure, and that's fine. That's the way they... if that's what they want to do and that's the way they want to show their their appreciation for him, that's fine. I get it. But by me criticizing or not loving everything he's done, doesn't make me any less of a fan. In fact, I would put my fandom up against anybody's. And I would say the fact that I could look at things also from a realistic point of view and still gush over something that's great, as well as criticize something that I think misses the mark, I think that makes me a big fan as well, because I'm able to look at it and appreciate him as a human and not as some godlike figure. And that's just my take. Some people, everything Elton does is the Midas touch. And I get that. That's fine. So about this album, I will say, from in terms of a project that Elton was looking to come back with something different, something fresh in terms of his past, something to inspire him, something to get his creative juices flowing, you can hear that on this album. So in that case, this album is a complete success for the kind of album that he wanted to make, for the kind of artistic expression at this point in his career and in his life, which he has earned the right to do. I will not question him putting this album out, working with Brandi Carlile. In my view, he has given so much to his fans, so much to me, so much to his fans, so much to the world over the last 50-some years. He has earned, more than earned, the right to do whatever he wants to do, personally or creatively, especially creatively. He can do whatever he wants. It might not be what his fans want, but that's just selfish. And we are all selfish about Elton. We all have our view of, and our perfect picture of what Elton, oh, wouldn't be great if he did this. We all do that. I've talked to fans, diehard fans from around the world, and we all have our dreams of, oh, if he only did this. We all have their ideas of what Elton should do. But at this point in his life, he has earned the right to do whatever he wants to do. If he doesn't want to tour anymore, he shouldn't tour. If he wants to make albums that are not what we would expect or necessarily want, that's fine. He has done that. He has served us well. He has more than served us. And I think to some extent we now should return the favor and serve him and understand what he wants to do. He has earned that right. He has more than given us. And in my view, I just hope he continues to do whatever he can do creatively, because the sad truth of it is he's 78 years old, and to hear him play the piano and sing on this album is impressive. He doesn't sound like a 78-year-old man. He's clearly inspired. He's clearly invigorated on this record. As I said before, his musical talent is truly a unique gift that comes around once in a lifetime. And whether you like him or not, you have to appreciate that talent. And we're lucky to have been around when it was in action. But the sad truth is that he's 78 years old and there's no guarantees. And within 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, whatever it is, that talent will be gone. And while there will be tribute bands and things like that, that talent, for what it is and how it is and how unique and distinct it is, will be gone. Yes, we'll have the records. Yes, we'll have the concert films and things like that, but it cannot be duplicated. Just like Mozart can't be duplicated, just like Bach can't be duplicated, just like Beethoven can't be duplicated, just like Pavarotti can't be duplicated, just like Maria Callas can't be duplicated, just like Leonardo da Vinci can't be duplicated. Yes, there will be other talented people to come, but those unique genius talents cannot be replicated. And I really, with all objectivity in mind, believe that Elton John's music and his talent, the pure talent, you can debate the quality of the music if you like, but the core foundation of that talent that he has it can't be replicated. It's unique. It's intense. It's once in a lifetime. It's once in mankind. And I just hope that we can use it and have access to it while it exists, because it will be gone. And when it's gone, it's gone. And so, yes, the selfish fan of me says, yeah, I would love to have an Elton John, Bernie Taupin album. That's the selfish fan in me, because I view that talent of his as being such a unique and special and temporary gift to the world. Because when it's gone, it'll be gone. So I want as much of that as I can while it exists in this world. So that's selfish of me. I get it. But I still say that Elton has earned the respect to do whatever he wants. This album is very good. It is not a masterpiece, as some have called it. I think that's a little hyperbole. In my view, if you're going to talk about Elton John's albums or legacy, masterpiece falls into two, and I talked about them before. Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy, and Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Those are the two masterpieces in my mind. Then you could say the great albums. There are several of those. In the great album category, I would put Tumbleweed Connection, Madman Across the Water, and Honky Chateau. Actually, all came right after one another. 71, 72, and 72 as well. And then 73 came Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only a Piano Player is a good album, but it's not. There are some great, great songs. In fact, one of my favorite songs of all time, High Flying Bird, is on it. I'd put that in the very good category. I don't think it's a great album. I think it's very good. I say masterpiece, great, very good, and good. Those are my categories. So yeah, I would put in the masterpiece category, Captain Fantastic and Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. In the great category, I would put Tumbleweed Connection. I would put Madman Across the Water. I would put Honky Chateau. And I would also put a later album, in fact. Yeah. I would actually put an album called Songs from the West Coast that was made in 2001 in that category as one of his great albums, which is quite a testament to think that he was making albums from the 70s and 30 years later he could make a great album, but he did with Bernie Taupin. Then there are some very good albums. Too Low for Zero, Sleeping with the Past, Made in England. And I would put this one in the very good category. The good to very good. That's where I would put it. It's not a masterpiece. It's not great. It's very good. And it's good. It in my view, a lot of times I will look at an album as to how I rate it, is to say to myself, in real honesty, will I be playing this album in a year from now? And if I do play it, will I play it all the way through, or will I pick selected songs? Now, a lot of times an album grows on you. And so, I mean, this album just came out. So who knows? But I would say that as I listen to it and I think about it and I react to it, I mean, there are songs that I've heard one time and knew they were classics. I heard his song Sacrifice. He played it in concert before it was released, before the album was released. He played it here in Chicago at Poplar Creek. Never heard the song before, didn't know anything about it, didn't know the name, didn't know anything. And I heard that song, and I said, that is an Elton John classic. And it turned out that it has become that. In fact, it was his first number one solo song in the UK. I know when I love a song, and it hits me, if I'm going to listen to that song forever. And there are a few songs on here that I think that, yeah, in a year, I think I'll still be listening to this album. And I would say there was at least four songs on here that I would listen to. Now, there's 10 songs on the album. So every song to me isn't great. As I said, the performance, Elton's performance is superior. And Brandi Carlile's voice is on full display here, which, as I said, that I believe that was the goal of the album, was to expose her talent and her voice. And as I said, I have to give Elton huge, huge kudos for being so generous and so magnanimous, because at times, to be very honest, when you listen to this album, it almost feels like it's a Brandi Carlile album with Elton John on background, either vocals or piano. That's how prominent her voice is on this album. And Elton deserves credit, because this is considered an Elton John album in many people's view, and yet he has graciously turned this over into being truly a collaborative album. And in many cases, Brandy's voice is the lead vocal on some of the songs, and Elton is simply backing up her voice or harmonizing with her, but she's the lead vocal. Now, in my view, as I said, I know in theory this, or in practical application, this is this was meant to be a collaborative effort between Elton and Brandi. However, the selfish Elton John fan in me says, well, this is an Elton John album, really. His name is really still above the title. I would have hoped that every song, at the very least, I get the collaborative effort here, but it's Elton John. It's Elton John. And he hasn't put out a new song and a new album in a long time. I would have hoped that at least the first voice we heard on every song would have been Elton's. And that's not the case. And there's so many songs. I mean, Brandy's voice is so strong, and it's so high in the mix that it really dominates. And sometimes, as I said, you get a feeling that it's kind of a Brandi Carlile. And maybe that was the intention. As I said, Elton was feeling uncertain. Maybe he wasn't that confident in his voice. He certainly got inspired. His piano playing is great. I wish his piano was a little higher in the mix, but that's a common thing that I've been saying for 50 years. Well, not 50, but at least 40, starting with Chris Thomas. Elton fans will know what I mean. But it's a very good to good album. There are four songs that I think I will always be playing. Ironically, two of them were written by Bernie Taupin. So that's I don't think, coincidental. I'd love to know what Bernie's real input was on this. He wrote three lyrics by himself. But by all accounts, Brandi really contributed a majority of the lyrics. Even though Bernie is credited, I don't know if he actually did some specific editing and added lines or change things, or he was just there to read them over and say, well, yeah, that's good. I don't know. I'd like to get a little more information as to what his real participation was in this, because it really does feel like a Brandi and Elton album. Yet he is credited on all the songs. And there's a couple of lines, especially in the song, the title track, Who Believes in Angels. I thought, without knowing beforehand, that was a Bernie Taupin lyric. So either Brandi Carlile can really write in Bernie's style, or perhaps there's a few lines there's a mention of a rodeo queen, which just sounds very Taupin-esque. I don't know if he changed lines, he added things. I don't know. That's really not, that hasn't really been fully explained. Hopefully it will be with time. But two of the songs, The Rose of Lord Nero, which begins the album, which is a very powerful song and a tribute to a singer-songwriter in the 70s named Laura Nero, who many people will know, who wrote some very big hits like And When I Die, the Blood, Sweat, and Tears song, and One Less Bell to Answer, or no, Wedding Day Blues, Eli's Coming, which Bernie references in this song. Elton and Bernie were both big fans of Laura Nero. She passed away in the 80s, and she was not as well known or successful as she should have been, but she was very instrumental and influential to many songwriters, including Elton and Bernie. Another song that ends the album, which is really a beautiful song, called When This World Is Done With Me, and Elton, it's a beautiful Taupin lyric about death, and with Elton and Bernie. Elton 78 now, Bernie almost 75, mortality is definitely on their minds. They both have two young children. Bernie has two daughters. They're both in their teens and early 20s. And so you could tell that Bernie writes for Elton as well as himself. And so this is clearly, mortality is on the minds of both of them. And it's a beautiful song, a great matching of Elton melody and Taupin lyric, and especially Elton's vocal on it. You could really feel it. A beautiful song, one of their best in many years, in fact. And a song that Brandy wrote called Light in the World. I really like that. She writes a song that she sings solo on this called You Without Me, which is a beautiful song about a parent seeing their child grow up. Once again, Elton being very magnanimous, giving Brandy her own song. She sings it by herself, performs it by herself. She wrote it. It's her song, and it's on this album. Once again, enforcing the collaborative album concept. But to me, this is an Elton John album. I think from a selfish standpoint, it's a beautiful song. It's a great song. I just wonder if it belongs on this album or it belongs on a Brandi Carlile album. Now, on this album, it's going to get more exposure. So maybe it does belong. But as I said, being a longtime diehard fan, it's hard not, when you get a new album, it's hard not to want as much Elton as possible, especially since as much Elton as possible is now finite, more than it was 30 or 40 years ago. But that's selfish. That's me. I think that that this is an album that can stand on its own. It's a great creative effort. It's a very good album. It certainly belongs high up in the Elton catalog. Brandy certainly stepped up and showed that she deserves to be in a studio with Elton. As I said, not every song in my mind is a great song or a winner. There's some great aspects within each song. As I said, throughout the album, Elton's piano playing on many songs is right up there. Little Richard's Bible, The River Man, his piano, even at the end of The Rose of Laura Nero, there's some great piano there. We've already heard the song Never Too Late, which is kind of a nice Elton-ish ballad. Another song, Someone to Belong To, which is actually dedicated to David Furnish, Elton's husband, and has a very nice lyric and melodic feel to it. It's a very good album. I don't think it's a great album, but for someone at Elton's age, at 78, to put out this high of a quality of an album? That's an amazing achievement. That's not being ageist. It's just being real. Elton had his own questions about it himself. In reality, most artists, if you look back at their output, they did their best work, whoever it is, painters, musicians, singers, whatever it is, most artists do their greatest work in their early to mid-20s or early 30s. So for Elton to put out an album of this quality, this creative, and this inspired at age 78 is a huge accomplishment. Yeah, it does deserve perhaps that extra star review that it's been getting, just because he can still do it at a high level of quality. And so for that, I am very thankful and appreciative to have a new set of Elton John songs that I could learn the words to, that I could come back and be inspired by and want to hear and keep humming. And this album certainly has several of those. Who Believes in Angels is the name of the album. Elton John, Brandi Carlile. Whether you're an Elton John fan or not, take it for what it's worth. But this Elton John fan says, give it a listen. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone, listen to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 463. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.